In recent years, gang violence and shootings have turned some Chicago neighborhoods into domestic war zones. In an attempt to address the problem, in 2004, the Violence Interrupter Program was launched by the anti-violence organization Cease Fire. It sent reformed criminals into dangerous neighborhoods to mediate gang conflicts and keep local disputes from leading to violence. In their new documentary called The Interrupter, Steve James and Alex Kotlowitz follow several violence interrupters around Chicago over the course of a year as they resolve conflicts and prevent fights from breaking out. It opens at the IFC Center today. I'm very pleased it has brought Steve James and Alex Kotlowitz back to our show. Hello.
Hi.
How frequent are violent crimes in Chicago's worst neighborhoods?
Well, the numbers are actually down from 20 years ago, but having said that, they're still extraordinarily high. There are roughly 450 homicides a year in the city, most of them concentrated in a very small number of communities.
And so what do we mean by the worst, those communities? By the worst neighborhoods.
Well, I mean, you know, these are communities where violence is a part of the daily life in these neighborhoods, where people sort of have to be – they're on their heels.
And you compare the streets of Chicago, at least in those neighborhoods, to war zones in Iraq. Are they really that bad?
Well, I don't think they're – that bad. I think we don't make that comparison. We feature television news reporters mm-hmm. making that comparison. And in fact, people in the neighborhoods speaking at a rally. And I think what it is that for them, it just seems untenable to have it be that violent in America and to have so many lives lost in just one city alone compared to the number of American lives lost in Iraq or Afghanistan.
So is gang violence the most common cause of murders in Chicago?
Not, you know, the thing about it, you have to be careful about saying gang violence, because even though a lot of times on the surface it may look like gang violence, it's really more interpersonal things that are going on. There's a family in the film that has two brothers in it that are from warring cliques. And if one of them had succeeded in shooting the other one, which is what Kobe, our interrupter, is trying to mediate, I'm sure in the paper it would have been reported as an incident of rival cliques and two brothers, God forbid, killing each other. But the reality that you find out as this unfolds in the film is that this was really a family conflict.
And often some of these conflicts seem to be sparked by the most silly sorts of things. Somebody pushed somebody, right. And the next thing you know, weapons are being pulled out.
Right. I mean, you're right. They're often over seemingly really petty stuff. Somebody steps on your toe, you know, they diss your girlfriend. But I think what you see is, as Amina Matthews, one of the interrupters, says in the film, you know, you get up in the morning, you know, maybe you're wearing hand-me-down clothes, maybe you haven't had breakfast, maybe your mother's being abused by her boyfriend, and you get to school and somebody bumps into you, and all this rage just boils over into what Amina calls these 30 seconds of rage.
But where are the Chicago police in all of this?
Well, I mean, the interrupters would tell you is that the police come in after a crime's committed. Their whole idea is to come in before or in the middle of one and try to mediate it and prevent it from escalating.
So tell us about Gary Slutkin, Dr. Slutkin. What led him to create the organization called Cease Fire?
Well, Gary is a trained epidemiologist. He deals with infectious diseases, and he spent 10 years in Africa battling first cholera in the Somalian refugee camps and then AIDS in Uganda, working with World Health. And he got tired of the nomadic life and came back to Chicago in the mid-90s during this spate of particularly awful shootings of some young people in the city. And he began to sort of look at the violence and think of it as an infectious disease. And I think what intrigued Steve and myself about his work and the work of Cease Fire is they take the moral judgment out of the equation. There's, you know, not good and bad people. And the other thing, of course, are these interrupters who are around the table, who meet every Wednesday, who are sussing out disputes in their communities.
But there are people, I'm sure, who object to the idea that this sort of violence is infectious disease.
Yes, I mean, there are certain people that would take issue with this analogy. You know, there's a lot of debate that goes on here about the root causes of violence, and in fact, at one point in the film, we have a bit of that debate around a National Guard meeting where this state representative is asked for the National Guard to come in and patrol the streets of Chicago, right? And in the film, we use that as a platform for Gary to talk about how he thinks that violence if you can bring the violence down, it can help neighborhoods revive. In the scene, though, there are people in that room at this town hall meeting who are saying, you know, you come to talk about violence and gangs and drugs. What about jobs? What about opportunities? And you know, it's Eddie Bocanegra, one of our other interrupters, who really sort of engages in that debate with Dr. Slutkin through the film and says, sometimes I do feel like what we're doing is a Band-Aid, that we really need to address these underlying causes.
Because there could be short-term effects, but the long-term problems remain.
Yeah, well, I think it's a really interesting debate. I think for myself and Alex, we feel like there's truth to both sides of that, that clearly if you can bring the violence down in a neighborhood, it will help other aspects of life in that neighborhood. But on the other hand, without really investing in these neighborhoods as a society, you know, how far can they really get?
Dr. Slutkin considers violence primarily a learned behavior. Now, are we talking about Chicago specifically, or could we say that this sort of thing is happening in cities all over the country? I know Chicago has
serious. In the world.
Yeah. Right. No, the violence, absolutely. In Chicago, in fact, Chicago isn't even in the top 10 when it comes to violent acts.
We're just the poster child, right. Often because of the the sort of flamboyant acts of violence that get, you know, caught up in the media. Like when Darian Albert was killed. You know, here's a kid that was murdered after school in a neighborhood dispute, really more than a gang dispute, and it was captured on somebody's cell camera, and it went around the world and turned Chicago into this sort of poster child.
So, how does the Violence Interrupter Program reduce violent crime?
Well, the interrupters, you know, they're all, as you said, they're all formerly of the street. And what they do is they gather every Wednesday in these incredible meetings. I mean, it's this wonderful window onto their neighborhoods in which they talk about the disputes that are boiling, simmering in their neighborhoods. And their job is to go out and try to suss out disputes and mediate them before they become violent.
You say of the street. Most of them are former criminals or related to crime figures, which gives them a certain amount of credibility, doesn't it?
It's the perfect resume for this job. If not, you know, there's probably no other job where that background serves them, frankly. But this job, it absolutely serves
them. So how do they wind up becoming interrupters? Are they recruited?
Yeah, T.O. Hardiman, who created the program, he's really, you know, the brainchild behind this part of Ceasefire. And he's the guy that goes, sometimes he goes into prisons and literally recruit someone there. But it's, you know, he has a network of contacts and relationships that he can sort of figure out who could be a good candidate for this.
Well, this is an extremely dangerous job, isn't it? Because these people are inserting themselves into explosive situations. Are they paid?
Oh, they're paid. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for them, it's a job. In fact, for some of them, it's probably the only job they could get coming out of prison. And you're right, it is dangerous. And in fact, during our filming over the course of the year, two of the interrupters were shot doing mediations, one of whom you see in the film, who was shot in the back and in the ankle. And, you know, they're trained. They go through very rigorous training. They're kind of taught to walk when to walk away from a dispute, but sometimes you don't always get out in time.
I'm talking to Alex Kotlowitz and Steve James. Their film, The Interrupters, opened today at the IFC?
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
Yep.
Which is on Avenue of the Americas in Greenwich Village. You mentioned Amina Matthews. Her father is a Jeff Fort, who's a well-known gang leader. Did she get involved because she saw what this kind of violence can do to a family?
Well, you know, what's interesting about Amina is that as she makes clear in the film, she wasn't part of his life in that way. She wasn't in his gang. She carved out her own criminal path, as it were. But I think what's amazing about her is that she is, in many respects, she is a chip off the old block in terms of the power and charisma that she possesses, that he possessed as well. And it's amazing that what she's done is that she has kind of turned all those incredible skills to this kind of work now.
She also works with a young woman named Capricia and encourages her to finish high school. Do interrupters build long-term relationships with the people that they're helping?
With some of them. I mean, with Capricia, I think what's interesting is that Capricia kind of got her hooks into Amina. you know, she sees herself in this young woman, and she can't just let go. As much as sometimes she'd want to, because she can't do that with everybody, clearly. You can't do that with everybody. She's got her own family, and there's many other people that need help. But I think this is a special case in terms of Capricia. And even to this day, we're about a year away from our last filming on this. Mm-hmm. She's still very much involved in Capricia's life.
Now, why aren't the police working hand in hand with these people?
Well, there is some cooperation between the police and the Interrupters. I mean, they have, a working relationship. I think the Interrupters need to be careful. I mean, they're out on the street. They don't want to be seen as informants to the police, so they keep their distance from the police force. And I think they also do very different things. You know, the police are coming in to a crime, to a violent act, after it's happened. And the role of the Interrupter is to get there before it unfolds.
And you know, that delicate line for them because of the way the police are viewed in these communities. And so whatever contact with the police, and sometimes it's strained and sometimes it's back channel, but it has to be, as Alex says, it's a very delicate line they have to walk.
Well, how do the Interrupters even know where a potential fight is about to break out?
They do, as T.O. Hardiman says, they need to intercept whispers. You know, Kobe, for example, he's out in the streets daily. And we rode around with him on many of those days.
The three basic Interrupters that you deal with are Amina, Kobe, and Eddie.
That's right. And so Kobe, here's a guy that's on the streets constantly and riding around. I mean, if police go out and patrol the streets in the way they do, Kobe does his own version of that. But it's all about connecting with people, handing out his cards, seeing what's up. And he has handed out so many cards over the years that when people get into situations like this guy Flamo that you meet in the movie, they call him. They know how to reach him. They don't even have to just run into him on the street.
And how did Kobe handle that situation?
Well, yeah, I think you see this in the movie. We don't want to give it all away, but I think it's like when you first meet Flamo through Kobe, he's in a murderous rage. He wants to exact revenge on a guy that he thinks tricked on him and sent the police to his house. And, you know, in a moment of soberness, if you will, Flamo made the call to Kobe to say, I need your help. But by the time Kobe showed up with us in tow, he'd been drinking and he was back to that, I don't really want your help. I just want to go deal with this.
So how did this film develop? Alex, you'd written an article about the Interrupters for the New York Times magazine.
Right. I think it goes back actually to Steve's first film, Hoop Dreams, and my first book, There Are No Children Here. I mean, both of us in those projects, I think, were deeply affected by the violence and saw the incredible effect it had, devastating effect it had on families who lost loved ones. And so this in some ways is kind of a bookend to that. And I've been sort of grappling with this for years and trying to figure out a way to sort of look at it with a fresh eyes. And Ceasefire offered that for me. And so I went and wrote this piece for the New York Times Magazine. And Steve and I are longtime friends. And
when I read it, we'd been wanting to do something together. And I called him up. I said, fantastic piece. Maybe we should pursue this as a documentary.
Well, part of the power of the film is that you actually are witness to some of these potential flare-ups, pretty dangerous situations. Did you ever feel like you were in danger?
I don't think we ever really felt we were in danger. I think in part because we were with people who had such profound respect in those communities. We were with them and we were, you know, in essence endorsed by them. I think the other thing you have to remember is that, you know, in these communities, these disputes weren't with us. They were with other people. And if they were accepting of us being there, we really weren't in any danger.
Right. So they were, it was okay for you to be there.
Well, we had to be careful about it. And the Interrupters, they were great about sort of figuring out a situation where it would make sense for us to be there and ones where it wouldn't. And we always said going in that they can tell people if they think it's one we can be at, we can do this without having your face on camera. And a lot of times people said, okay, great, I'll do it then. But by the time we got there or by the time it had played out, or in the case of ones where we actually keep coming back to a situation, once people got a sense of really what this was, and then they felt more comfortable about actually being in it.
Now, of course, there's also the community involved. You talked about the death of Darian Albert, who was a 16-year-old honor student, and that plays gets significant attention in the film. it led these communities to rally against violent crime. So are they giving a lot of support to the interrupters?
Well, I think what you see in the film is, you know, I think one of the myths that we have about these communities is they've somehow become numb to the violence. And you can see, as you point out, in the wake of Darian Albert's killing, I mean, the community rallies to try to figure out a way to stop the violence. And sometimes it's with ceasefire. Sometimes it's on their own. But it's, I think one of the things that we saw is that these communities, these neighborhoods are desperately looking for ways out.
And obviously, as you mentioned earlier, some people argue that the best way to reduce violence in the long term is to improve schools, make more jobs available, generally improve the environment where violence occurs. Is Ceasefire's Interrupters program being exported to other cities?
Yes.
Would it work in Los Angeles? Or,
absolutely.
Or what about New York?
It's here in New York.
It
now.
Is here, yeah.
With a group called SNUG.
And it's in two places in New York, isn't it? In two of the boroughs. Right. But, you know, it's also going around the world. They're in Iraq. In the film, you see a group delegation from South Africa that's come to visit to evaluate, and it's actually going to South Africa.
So because these techniques are now proving to be effective.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I think in the exportable nature of it, it does sort of support Gary's premise, which is that, you know, violence can manifest itself in different ways and for different reasons in different cities or different cultures, but that there is a commonality to the way in which it spread and sort of in a sense infects a population.
Steve James and Alex Kotlowitz will be introducing the film and taking questions afterward tonight at 7:30 and 10:05, and then tomorrow at 4:55 and 7:30 p.m. The film The Interrupters, opening at the IFC Center today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.